You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined with co-host Josh Newman. We are doing this on Halloween, so All Hallows Eve. Are you a Halloween person?
Yeah, definitely a Halloween person. As a kid, as a young adult, certainly that was a big social function once you, became an adult and had some disposable income, I guess you could call it. And then, lost interest a little bit, but now I'm back in because my kid is two. And now, unlike last year when he wasn't walking, now he's walking and he's talking a bit. And you can at least get the whole thing of like knocking on the door, sort of saying trick or treat or whatever, however he'll say it in his own language. So, we're recording this at 10:30 in the morning and, definitely have plans to like go trick or treating once he gets out of school. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
See, I'm not a Halloween person. Like it's like my birthday was actually Saturday. So it's really close to.
Happy belated. I did not know that.
I don't tell anybody. I'm not one of those people.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to spend it all day long at Rice Eccles Stadium. Super fun.
How'd that go for you?
Yeah, it went well. No, but I like a lot of people just assume because my birthday's like 3 days before Halloween that it's like, oh, that's got to be your holiday, and everything. And I just like it's fine. It's there. Like I've never been one that like has to go dress up and I have to do all this get all the paint on. Like my kids, like they're now older that, I send my kids out and they just go on their own and I sit home and I'm the curmudgeon that answers the door. So.
Did you have a favorite Halloween costume when you were a kid? Something that stands out?
That's a good question. I don't even know. I mean, I probably was just like the traditional stuff. I mean, I do remember one year I thought I was like edgy and I ripped up a shirt and put like fake blood on it and stuff. And, super edgy Josh right there. And I was probably like 10, so whatever. But no, I was never like really into like massive amounts of like makeup. Like I don't like... I'm a weird person where I don't like stuff being on me, like in terms of like my, if my hands are wet or there's goo on it or something, like I really, I hate it. So stuff like that never worked. Now with that said, so years and years ago, I worked as a lifeguard at Laguna Beach and not in California at Lagoon. So, super, super high class, right? Hey, it was the best job I think I've ever had. But like they held our bonus, our end of year bonus over our heads if we didn't work fright mirrors. And so really? Like you had to go work in the haunted houses or something like that. And I actually really loved that because they'd like dress you up as like a werewolf or like a clown or a mime or something. And my favorite thing was dressing up as a clown and then going up and singing in like a really high pitched voice, like Ring Around the Rosie or something, and scaring the crap out of people.
Is there video of this?
No, there's not video.
You're lying.
No, I don't. The video wasn't like that easy back then. Like we didn't have, like iPhones, but no, I mean like to that point, like I embraced it. I loved it. And I would go like hide behind like girls that were walking in there and like scream and like sing the song right behind their ears or something, terrify them. Yeah. That was the only time I think I could embrace Halloween. How about that?
Yeah. The only one that stands out to me is like, look, as a child of the late 80s and into the 90s, I loved Hulk Hogan, just like 8 billion other kids. So yeah, had the Hulk Hogan tank top one year with the red bandana. Pretty sure I did like a handlebar mustache, yes. Blonde. So yeah, that was, yeah.
Are you wanting candy, my brother?
Yeah. A big 10-year-old, right? I was the biggest kid in class for years and years dressed up as Hulk Hogan. That was quite a sight. I assume my parents have pictures somewhere floating around back.
That's blackmail. Back east. For sure blackmail. So I need to wear my reporter hat and contact Newman's parents and find this, right?
Good luck to you.
They're like, no. All right, well, nobody listened to us for our Halloween takes. I'm sure they're great. I'm sure I hate pumpkin spice, so we can get that one off the list if you want to do that. So my kids had the pumpkin spice frosty, at Wendy's, and I went to take a bite of it, and I'm like, this is awful. Like, why do people do this?
I was never a pumpkin fan, but like slowly as I'm aging, like I'm getting more into pumpkin. Like my wife made like some pumpkin cream cheese over the weekend.
Okay, I could do that.
Tremendous. So I'm like slowly adopting pumpkin. So now, you know, pumpkin flavored beers, maybe pumpkin flavored coffee, apple cider, right? The same ecosphere as pumpkin. But yeah, this pumpkin cream cheese she made was like really fantastic. So slowly but surely, you know, diving into the pumpkin stuff.
Pumpkin cheesecake is like the best. Like if you can do that one, that is really good. Once again, because my birthday was this close, my mom would always give me a pumpkin pie instead of birthday cake. And I actually liked that because I hate birthday cake, so pumpkin pie worked. But too many people hate
birthday cake. Really,
it's fine. Like I'll eat it. I'm just not a. Okay. You're finding out a lot about me on this podcast. Holy crap!
I'm not judging. I'm just like, wow. Like no, you just don't hear a lot of people say I don't like birthday cake. That always is like a universal thing. Sure. Oh, birthday cake. Who doesn't like birthday cake? But okay, no judgment. That's fine.
I like salty. I'm savory. I don't like sweets as much. So how about that?
Sure.
Again, anyways, no judgment. Anyways, let's jump into to real stuff. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. No. All right. Well, let's jump into the Pac-12 rewind. It was a crazy week. All the teams were playing this week. There was a few results that were really interesting. You could start with Washington beating Stanford in a closer game than expected. You could have USC, which absolutely should have lost. It was a train wreck, and there is no answers for USC in terms of their defense. I don't think Alex Grinch still watches film, but, you know, teach their own. You had Arizona State upsetting Washington State. Arizona beating Oregon State. I mean, there was crazy. I mean, of all that, what is kind of the game that you're looking at right now?
You know what, the Arizona game, the win over Oregon State at home, right, with the return of Michael Wiley for Arizona, and Arizona kind of leaned on Oregon State late. That, you know, that's the most like kind of like wow, jarring result from the weekend. But, you know, you start to kind of think about what the weekend was. Yes, USC's defense is a mess, and this was another game that USC probably deserved to lose, right? They were down two score. I believe it was two scores going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, they figured out enough to come away with a 50-49 win. And for all of the jokes that we've made about USC and the jokes that we've made about Alex Grinch and the defense and the games that we believe that USC should have lost, they haven't lost those, okay? And they have one Pac-12 loss. And they're a half game out of the Pac-12 lead behind Washington. They're a half a game behind Washington. USC's right there. You know, for whatever warts, for whatever, you know, problems on defense, the fact remains they have one Pac-12 loss going into November. And look, you still have a bit of a gauntlet here having to play Washington. They play Washington this week, right?
Yes, this week.
So you have to play Washington, you have to play Oregon. You know, we'll see what happens. But again, you're right there. So no matter what's gone on defensively, otherwise, you have done enough to put yourself in the mix. You quote should have lost against Arizona. You quote should have lost against Cal. You got beat by Utah. That's all well and good. But to paraphrase Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are, and USC's record includes only one Pac-12 loss. So they're right there as the most important stretch of the season is upon us now.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like looking at it, it seems really frustrating to look at USC and realize they're that close to getting to the Pac-12 championship game. They're not a complete team, but the reality is you have Caleb Williams, right? And he's got an arsenal of talent around him. They're going to do phenomenal. You've got Zakiya Branch. You've got, you know, Brendan Rice. You've got all these guys that can do a lot, and they can score at will. And so if you go up against a team that isn't equipped to kind of compete with them on defense, USC's always in the game, right? Like, that's the thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
USC is going to be very much in this game against Washington. And actually, that line is very close. The line is only 3.5 for Washington on the road. And so you would look at that and you would say, USC's a trash team. I use that loosely, right? But, like, you can say that looking at some of the things that you've seen and different things that way, but they're not, right? Like, that's their record. They are a like you said, a half a game or a game out from that championship. And so it's just it sometimes like the eye test, quote unquote eye test that everybody wants to use. And tonight, actually, we're going to get the first college football playoff rankings, and so we'll see where the committee kind of sees USC. But sometimes that eye test does fail, right? Like, USC doesn't look like a complete team. They don't look like a championship contending team or a playoff contending team, but they're still in the mix, and that's the reality of it. So it's interesting that way. Outside of that, Washington, to me, has looked beatable. They don't look... After that Oregon game, it seemed like they've kind of gone a different way, and Oregon's gone the other way, right? Like, Oregon looks like a very complete team, and honestly, Oregon probably should have won that game in Washington. Like, it was a really close game. I felt like, especially in the second half, they played like the better team, but that doesn't always translate to wins. But you're seeing a Washington team that they're much more one-dimensional. You know, if Michael Penix Jr. is working and cooking, they're a very dominant team, and it's really hard to stop them. But they're not, they don't have that second gear. They don't have that run game, or they don't have a defense that's necessarily going to keep you in games. And so it's much harder for Washington to be able to compete on the same level as an Oregon can. You look at, like, projecting forward, Oregon is favored in every single one of their games. Washington isn't. And that's the crazy thing is, like, Washington is very vulnerable, but they're still clearly one of the best teams in the conference. And so you kind of take that context of USC and Washington and just seeing how the two are kind of made right now. And it's a very interesting thing that the fact that they get to play this week, knowing that both of them are flawed, but now we get an opportunity to kind of see how this shapes out instead of last year where there was a whole bunch of mess, right? These teams didn't play each other. And I might try my hand and do my tiebreaker scenario again. I don't know. I know it's something that everybody loves, and it gives me a lot of pain. I got to take a deep breath there, but we'll see. We'll get into it.
We're muted. You do a good job with, you know, the flow chart, and it's fun. There were, like, a couple of, like, real math majors on Twitter last year that were, like, doing the tiebreaker scenario. I forget which Twitter handle was, like, arguing with me down the stretch. Now, look, I was getting my information straight from Jim Thornby at the Pac-12 office.
Exactly.
That was, like, the official word. This is the tiebreaker. Like, this is what we're looking at. But there was one Twitter handle, and I'm sitting here, and I'm blanking on it. This person was arguing with me that, no, the Pac-12 office is wrong. It's A, B, and C. And then I remember after – so Utah beats Colorado, and they get the help they needed, right? Oregon State beats Oregon. UCLA beats Cal. Utah goes to the Pac-12 championship game. After the matchup is announced, this Twitter handle DMs me and was like, I'm sorry for arguing with you. I was wrong the entire time.
The problem was, it was that three-team or multi-team tie. Like, people just thought that it was like once two teams were isolated that those were the two teams, but it's not how that works. It was just isolating one team. It's a cluster, right?
And like I'm getting my information from the Pac-12 office, guys. So
he doesn't know.
Point being here, like, let's not argue about this, and let's just wait to see how things play out. And quite frankly, like, if you want to start getting into tiebreakers and such now, personally, I think there's too many games left still to like get into that whole thing. And remember, all these teams play each other. Okay, USC still has to play Washington and Oregon. Utah still has to play Washington. So like, this is going to become much clearer here within the next like week or two. And yeah, we might still have to get into tiebreakers and such, but let the next couple of weeks play out. We'll get closer to Thanksgiving, and it's going to become at least a little clearer. Maybe not necessarily who's in, but like who's out. Like, if Utah does not win out, like, they're not going to Vegas. Like, if they lose to Washington in 2 weeks, you can eliminate Utah. And if Oregon State loses again, right, that was a pretty tough loss to Arizona, just because now Oregon State has two Pac-12 losses, and you have to still play Oregon and Washington. If they lose one of those games, they're out. So just let the next week play out. Let the next 2 weeks play out, and I promise we're going to have a bit of a clearer picture of what we're looking at for the Pac-12 title game.
I will assure you that I have started looking at it, and it is interesting. There's seven teams right now that are in contention for a Pac-12 championship, and it really comes down to, if Washington wins out, they're a lock. If Oregon wins out, they're a lock. So those two teams, you know, if both of those teams win out, it doesn't really matter what anybody else does, and so that's the case. And in Utah's case, like you said, they have to start with winning out, and you're going to probably be favored in three of the four games. Maybe that Arizona game is iffy right now.
Some people think Arizona is going to be favored at home. I don't really agree with that. But as I've written, like, even if Utah is favored at Arizona, that is like really far from an automatic W.
Oh yeah.
That even before
it was Arizona beat Oregon State, exactly.
It was also a tough one. I think Arizona State's tough. I think Jed Fish does a good job. Noah Fifita at quarterback has been a bit of a revelation. So even before that Oregon State win, Utah going into Tucson was not like an automatic checkmark. And that's even more so now that, again, Arizona's playing really well. They have this massive win over Oregon State. They're rolling now with Noah Fifita. So that's a very intriguing, not easy game for Utah. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks, but that's not the automatic W that some people once believed it might be.
Yeah. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. And if I get the time and feel like I really want to hate myself even more than
if I decide to be a masochist, I'll go through with this.
I will. I started mapping it out last night and I was just like, this is a nightmare. Like, this is just, there's way too many teams in here. And like it actually breaks better than it did last year because they play each other, but right. It's a mess. So yeah. Well, anyways, let's transition now. There's a lot of Pac-12 games still left. I mean, there's four games left in the regular season, but there's still a lot of meaningful games. This week especially, there's some really good games out there, and so it'll be interesting. But we're going to talk about those in later podcasts. Let's recap Oregon game. There could be a lot of things that we could talk here, but overall, what is one of your biggest takeaways from this game?
Yeah, you look at the last, 2023, you look at the – you look at the home schedule going back to 2018, Utah, as we've talked about a lot, like Utah doesn't like lose at home, right? Since the start of the 2018 season going into Oregon, they were 30-2 since the start of 18, and they had won 18 straight going back to the COVID opener in 2020. Now, if you want to eliminate that COVID opener, if you believe it doesn't count and it's a scrimmage, whatever, it had been even longer since they'd lost it at Rice-Eccles. So that was one thing. So Utah does not get beat at Rice-Eccles, let alone get bludgeoned at home. That just doesn't happen. And that's just a fact. And Oregon came in and look, the first play from scrimmage was a 5-yard delay of game, and the crowd was bringing in the noise, and there was an atmosphere, and that might have been the highlight of the day.
Yeah,
for Utah, was that the crowd, you know, got that 5-yard delay of game, because Bo Nix was just, it's a cliche, right? He was surgical, 8 yards to Troy Franklin, Tez Johnson, Bucky Irving for 9 yards on the ground, and just right down the field. Bo Nix on a 1-yard bootleg opens the scoring, and the drive was so easy for Oregon, and Utah showed so little resistance that even that early in the game, at that moment, I was thinking, I don't know if Utah's up for this. I just don't know. That was so easy. And look, you can blame the injuries, right? And Lander Barton being out at middle linebacker, proved huge, because Bo Nix spent a lot of his day working, the middle of the field there for large chunks. So that was the big takeaway for me, is just how easy Oregon made that look. And not just Utah at home, and not just the home winning streak. I went back and I've covered this team since 2020. So I went back and looked at some of the losses, the two Rose Bowls. They lost to UCLA last year. They lost at Oregon State in 2021. Nobody had beat up Utah like that in my time covering this program. Mm-hmm. Just not even remotely close any of the other losses. The only, thing that you could maybe compare it to was the first Rose Bowl, right, where C.J. Stroud went nuts when Mekhi Bernard, was playing cornerback. But even then, that was a game the entire way.
It was still a close contest, yeah.
It was still a close game. Utah was never in this game at all. I like the aggression from Andy Ludwig early on Utah's first drive, going for it on fourth down, going for it on fourth down again once they were in field goal range. We can sit here and argue about, the second fourth down call with Bryson Barnes out of the gun when you need 1 yard. That's a different topic. But even with the aggression, field goals weren't doing it. So you had to, you had to at least go on a couple of those things. Again, I'm rambling a bit here. I'm still just thinking about how easy Oregon made that look. Because look, teams have beaten Utah, but you're going to be in for a fight for 60 minutes, and you're going to come out of there tired and bruised up. Oregon ran right through them with very, very little resistance. That's the shocking part to me, how little resistance Utah showed.
Yeah, and I think, for me, one of my biggest takeaways is kind of along that same lines. It's more just, having a veteran quarterback who just has been in the league for that long really is a game changer, right? Like, on paper, these two teams are probably pretty evenly matched, right? Like, I don't... Oregon still had the advantage because Utah still has a lot of their injuries. But the way Utah has played this season, they're fairly evenly matched. Utah can go toe-to-toe. Like, they can go against Troy Franklin. They can, you know, do whatever they need to there. They can they can stop Bucky Irving. And for the most part, they kind of did to some extent. Granted, Oregon didn't need to really run the ball much because the passing game was just so effective, and like you said, he diced him up. But I think,
I mean, they called the dogs off for the last like quarter and change too. It's not like they were, you know, they could have gone for more yards.
It could have been
yards,
50 something, no, right? Like, that's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
But like, to me, that's the difference, right? When you have a quarterback that just understands the scheme so well that he can pick it apart. Like, I listened to just a small little snippet of Bo Nix's media availability this week, and somebody asked him kind of some of the play calls and some of the designs and something. And, like, he went through it. He showed, like, okay, here's what, you know, Morgan Scalley was doing, and this is what we were doing, so this is what I was trying to see. And, like, he said there was three things going on at the same time that they were trying to figure out, and he's trying to do all that. But he didn't look phased, right? Like, there's a composure to that, and being able to be a veteran guy where the game is just completely slowed down to you to a point where, okay, I don't care what Morgan's doing, and I'm kind of teeing off on what I recognize from film. This is what we're going to do, and we're going to go back to this call, or we're going to go to this call, you know, an audible or something that way. It changes the game. Bryson Barnes has experience knowing the system, but knowing the system in terms of like practice reps and everything is a completely different game, right? Like, going in there and understanding, okay, this is what the defense is going to give me, and this is how I attack it. I know that this guy's going to come. It also didn't help that Utah's offensive line didn't give him any protection, and he still managed to do well enough with that. But I think that's the difference, right? Quarterback really matters if you have a guy that understands it and can break down those things. That's what makes Cam so great. He's a cerebral guy. He can get in there and he can diagnose what the defense is doing, and it helps. And so maybe this can lead to another discussion that we can have in a little bit, but like, it doesn't matter who is under center for Utah this year. That's going to be a problem, whether it's Nate Johnson, whether it's Bryson Barnes, whether it's even you want to do Brandon Rose or Luke Batari. This is where Utah's at. And so Utah has, they just have a steeper hill to climb. And when you're facing a team like Michael Penix, like Bo Nix, even Caleb Williams, they did much better against Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
It's just a different game, right? Like, you have to be hitting on every, you know, cylinder that you need to be able to be effective. And Utah just wasn't. So once they made a mistake, everything snowballed. They couldn't get anything going, and Oregon just absolutely took it to Utah.
Interesting side note here. I was listening to the College Game Day podcast this morning, which is really excellent three times a week. It's Reese Davis and Pete Dammel and Stanford Steve and some of the guys. And
are they paying you Reese for this?
Davis. Say it again.
Are they paying you for this? What is going on?
It's really good. I'm saying, if you like college football, I would check out the Game Day podcast. Anyway, Reese Davis was talking about, you know, they got done with Game Day. He's on the sideline. Oregon goes right down the field on the opening drive, scores. And as soon as they score, one of Dan Lanning's ops guys walks up to Reese Davis and he says to Reese Davis, hey, watch this. They're going to go for two. They didn't go for two. They did against Washington. Okay. If you watch the Washington Oregon game, Oregon's first touchdown, they score. They went for two immediately. Dan Lanning intended to go for two against Utah on the first touchdown drive, but you know, Utah was ready for it. They had watched film, so they went away from it. The point I'm making here is you need to be really confident and really firm with your team if you're going for two for really no reason on the opening drive. You really have to be confident in your scheme and what you're doing and confident in your quarterback and your guys to go for two, essentially whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Because you really don't see that at any level of college football and really not even the NFL. You don't see coaches going for two seemingly on a whim for seemingly no reason, but that's what Oregon intended to do. That's the level of confidence that Dan Lanning is dealing with right now, that he was intending to go for two against Utah.
And maybe that, you know, he saw this as a game where Utah absolutely can come in here and take it to them, probably more so than any other team just based on their defense. But then the game clearly was in their advantage, and Oregon had no problems doing anything. I mean, this was one of those games where I honestly started writing my story at the end of the first quarter. Like, and that doesn't happen that often for Utah.
You were done writing pretty early. Like third quarter, you were done.
Like, honestly, the bulk of my story was done before halftime. That's how bad this was. Like, and it doesn't happen that often, right? Like, Utah's been beat down, right? Like, this isn't the first time that Utah's ever lost by significant margins. But like you mentioned, this is not a team that loses that bad at Rice-Eccles Stadium, especially now that Kyle has had his full, you know, recruiting in the Pac-12 era and stuff like that. You can go back and point at some of those that were terrible and, you know, it just didn't work for Utah, but they didn't have the guys. I think the biggest loss that felt like this for Utah is probably Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game that was it first year, no second year,
19.
Yep. Yeah, this is like, it just doesn't happen that often. And so, look, you know, flush this game if you're a fan, and don't worry about it. It's one game. I think at the end of the day, Utah just doesn't have the guys right now to be able to compete with that, right? And it starts at quarterback, and that's not a knock on Bryson Barnes. I think Bryson in that game actually played relatively well. It wasn't anything phenomenal. It wasn't anything dynamic, and it wasn't going to win that game. But I wouldn't put that loss on Bryson. You know, yeah, he had two interceptions. One of them wasn't on him. Sione Vaki ran the wrong thing, or he stopped. I can't remember what it was. One of them, it was him, but one interception on your own, like, that's not going to change the game unless it's a very tight game. But for the most part, Bryson's done everything he needs to, right? Like, Kyle Whittingham has said, he's our guy. This is who he is. This is just a collective failure from Utah. You know, Kyle pointed a lot of the blame on the coaching staff, and he's always been that. He's never going to point it on the players. Very rarely is he going to point it on players. I think when Utah was terrible in special teams, that was the first time I think I've heard Kyle actually go after the players and say it's terrible and trash. But this is something. It was just an all around effort, right? Like, Utah, from the coaching staff to the players, they just all needed to be better, and it just all kind of collided in one game against a very, very, very good team.
So, 18-game winning streak at home is over. Oregon clearly, you know, was ready for Sione Vaki. I remember early in the game, you know, that he took off on a wheel route. That was well covered.
It was disguised, by the way. It was a kind of a disguised wheel route, right?
Yeah. But, you know, the point remains, like, Oregon had clearly schemed up for Sione Vaki.
They watched tape.
Watched tape, unlike Alex Grinch, apparently. Sione Vaki was a bit of a non-factor. Okay, five touches for 11. Well, not a bit of a non-factor. He was a non-factor. Five touches for 11 yards, all of it on the ground. The running game was not there. The offensive line got beat up pretty good. And now, you know what? The most interesting part of this was Mus Appreciation Day. This was sort of a game for the fans. And a lot of people left this game at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, we can, you know, the way the press area is set up at Rice-Eccles is we are down in the press box, but then you could walk up a small flight of stairs and go look out the window, and you can see the west parking lot right outside the stadium. You go up there at halftime to get a drink or something to eat or whatever, and you look out that giant window. There were a lot of people streaming out of Rice-Eccles on a day where, you know, walking around the stadium and, like, looking around, it had, like, big game Florida opener type of vibes to it. Game day was there. You know, obviously this was a college football playoff elimination game, major conference championship implications, and, like, people were streaming out of there at halftime. That's the way the first half went, that people were just – we're just not interested in seeing anymore. And honestly, you know, the way that had gone, like, I don't blame anybody for walking out of there early.
Well, the crazy thing is you go from college game day, which was honestly, like, I've been to four of the five college game days that Utah's been a part of. And this was probably one of the most electric, and you can say some of that's because Pat McAfee just kind of brings a different vibe to the town.
But
I think there really was a huge emphasis on Utah is a dominant team now. In years past, it was always kind of like Utah was this plucky team that is, you know, still kind of showcasing itself every once in a while, but they're not the team that is the Alabamas or the Washingtons or Georgias or Oregons for that matter. This felt like one of the years where they talked up Utah a lot. They felt like even though Oregon was the better team, Utah could go toe-to-toe because of their defense. And, you know, there was a great crowd there on Friday and on Saturday. And there was just this great vibe from everybody there. And that carried over into the game. Like, that stadium was actually probably one of the most full I've ever seen it, especially in a day game. The Mus was there. You know, when they started off and, you know, they bring their little towel or whatever it's called, the little Mus, I'm trying to blank in banner, whatever. I can't remember what it's officially called, but
giant,
yeah,
Mus banner. Yeah.
They do their jump, and like, that was the most crazy I've seen it in a long time at the beginning of a game. And, you know, you start off, you get that delay of game, and it just, you know, it invigorates that fan base and they're excited. And then it was just dead. Like, nothing happened. And it was cold. Granted, like, my family, this is the first game my family's ever come as well to a game, and they were out there and they were suffering, right? Like, it was freezing, the wind was howling, it was cold, and nobody wants to sit through that. So, like, I don't blame them. Like, I know a lot of people want to criticize the fans for leaving, especially the Mus, because this is the game you're honoring the Mus. Look, you got to put a good product out on the field, right? Like, it's not their fault you sucked that day. And I get, like you've got to support your team through wins and losses. But in that kind of an environment where it's cold, where there's just not really much going on, it's a Halloween weekend where people want to go party and go have fun, like, yep, you didn't put out a good product. And, like, at the end of the day, like, they're going to still support the Mus, and the Mus is going to support Utah. But, like, let's get off our high horse and say, like, you wouldn't do the same if you were in the same situation, right? Like, I'm not going to sit there. There's games, and maybe it's a little too harsh on the men's basketball team, but there's been games that I've wanted to walk out, and I'm a media member, right? Like, if I wasn't there getting paid, like, I would have walked out, at the tip-off, right? Like, so it happens. So put out a good product. Sometimes that's outside of your control, but look, the fans are going to show up if you're putting out a good product, and that's just the nature of the game.
I think a lot of basketball fans might disagree with that whole curtains thing, but I digress. I should have said that. I don't have the mental capacity to discuss, like, the Huntsman Center curtains right now.
Are they going
to
be up? What's going to happen, Josh?
Please stop. let me ask you this.
We start basketball Monday, so these questions have to be answered. When are you going to answer them, Josh? Are you hiding?
Please stop.
Okay.
Is College Game Day a curse? Of course, I asked that half joking, but, you know, you look at the history of Game Day coming to Utah. Look, 2010 was the infamous TCU game when they lost 47-7. You've got this 35-6 loss to Oregon. They lost to Washington in 2016. Is this a quote curse, Josh, when game day comes?
Well, it's funny because Kyle was kind of asked that question on Monday, and he obviously didn't take that very, very lightly. But I don't think it's a curse. I think it's just the nature of where Utah is, right? Like, if you go and you look back on all those games, all of them are big games outside of maybe the Cal game. I don't remember Cal having a ton of, I mean, they were a good team at the time, but it's not like some of these other games. These are big games.
That was more, that was more about Utah. Wasn't Utah unbeaten, ranked number 5 or whatever?
Yeah, they were number 5. Cal might have been ranked. I have to go back and look. But, yeah. But like, this is the situation with game day is they're going to find a game that matters, right? And so it's usually a higher profile game. It's a game that's going to obviously have a lot of attention on it. People want to be a part of it. And so, like, I don't think it's necessarily a curse or it's a bad thing. I think it's just these are tough games, right? These are games where ESPN has chosen, look, we see this as being a competitive game, and so we want to be a part of it. And the nature is Utah's going to lose some of those games, right? Like, their record is 2-3 in these games. One of those came on a year against BYU where they went undefeated, and that was their very first year on College Game Day. You know, it sucks, right? Like, my very first game day that I was covering, Utah played that TCU game, the game that nobody wants to talk about. I feel like this game is going to be another one of those where nobody wants to talk about it. But it's just the way it is, right? Like, you play the games because, like, that's what is there, and you want that attention. Beyond the results on the field, this was a huge, huge, huge recruiting advantage for Kyle Whittingham. Do you think that he's putting on a cutoff sleeves and riding a Harley and doing all that? He loves those things, but, like, he's doing that because of recruiting. He's trying to pitch to the world why you should come to Utah. And if he can be your average Joe and I can go arm wrestle Pat McAfee, Who doesn't love that? I mean, you national media was clamoring over it because it was just like, this is a phenomenal performance from Whittingham and the staff, and Cam Rising gets up there and talks, you know, great about Utah. And you had Alex Smith, Steve Smith, you had Lil Nas X, you know, who has family at Utah. Like, that matters. And so regardless of what happened on the field and whether it's a curse or not, I think Kyle Whittingham will take it 9 times out of 10 because it matters for recruiting and it puts you on the national profile.
Game aside, of course you would have liked, if you're Kyle, right, you would have liked your team to have played better. But like in totality, the weekend is a win for Utah because, again, you got all the national exposure with the McAfee show and game day. You know, the crowds really came out. They were into it. McAfee was on some podcast yesterday, Adam Schefter's podcast,
yeah,
I think.
And I think you're right.
And I'm paraphrasing it. And McAfee, you know, really sung the praises of Utah, saying that it was a great atmosphere and he wasn't expecting that. You know, it was clear that McAfee had some preconceived notions of what Utah is and what the University of Utah is. It seems like some of those preconceived notions, you know, they blew a hole through them. It was just a good weekend for Utah. And yeah, there are recruiting advantages, you know, for Kyle. I think it was really smart to put Rising in a front-facing position on the McAfee show on game day. You know, in spite of Cam not playing this year, he remains the most recognizable name and a very recognizable face. And he's got the distinct look with the hair and the Southern California voice. Like, that is a guy, for as long as he is at Utah, that you should be putting out there in those types of things, whether it's on national TV or national media wants to talk to him. You should continue to put Rising out there because he is going to continue to, you know, to put this program, this university, in a positive light. So in totality, game aside, it was a very positive weekend for Utah, I think.
Yeah, and I think you have to take it that way, right? Is you have to look at it as the win. You're playing the long game, you're not playing the short game. And this season was always kind of on borrowed time. I think once I've counted, and I could be totally off, Utah's had 10 season-ending injuries. That counts Keithy and Rising. They've had 28 players on the two deep that have missed some time.
That's an outrageous number. Both of those numbers are outrageous.
Yeah, like the 10 number alone is pretty bad, but 28 on the two deep, like that's ridiculous. And so, like I said, this has always been borrowed time, and Utah's found a way to do a lot with it, right? Like, they found a way to go into the LA Memorial Coliseum and get a win. Like, and win in a good way. Like, it didn't look like they just squeaked by. Like, this was a good team. So I think all of that buys into what Utah is trying to sell in that, look, even our depth players are still being competitive against the top-end talent of the Pac-12. And sure, like, when you go up against the very top, meaning Oregon, they weren't enough. But, like, all of that is a great sell for Utah, and that's why Kyle Whittingham isn't – I don't want to say, like, he's not upset that he lost, but, like, that's why this is still a winning weekend for Utah, because they had a lot of success. So call it a curse, call it whatever you want. I don't think Utah really cares. I think they care about the profile Rising. That's always been what Kyle has wanted since he got into the Pac-12 and knew that he could compete. He wants to build his national brand, and that's his job, right? His job is to build the national brand, make Utah this relevant thing. I listened to a bunch of podcasts, and they were speaking glowingly about Utah leading into the game, and they still were kind of disappointed after the game in the sense that they felt like Utah didn't live up to their expectations because they've set a standard. When you get national media who's telling the narrative, talking about Utah in that light, you've done something. You and I can talk about Utah all we want and praise their name or hate them or do whatever, and it's going to matter locally. But if national media is doing that and Kyle has been pushing that, that changes it completely, yeah, and people pay attention.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to add to that. I think a lot of national media were expecting Oregon to win because on paper, you know, before this game, Oregon is better, and Utah's dealing with, as you alluded to, a lot of season-ending injuries, a lot of two deep injuries. I do think everybody was expecting more of a competitive game.
Sure.
So from a football perspective, putting the rest of the stuff aside, from a football perspective, you did leave this game with a bit of a sour taste in your mouth just because of how badly it went. And, you know, I've talked before about, you know, the Cal game was a bit of a referendum on what the rest of the season could be. So this Arizona State game coming up is not quite like a referendum on the season. But look, you would expect Utah, just based off recent history, you would expect Utah to kind of like pick themselves up and be ready to play a game on Saturday. And look, they should beat Arizona State. We're going to talk more about that on Thursday on the podcast. But Utah, no matter who the quarterback is, like, Utah is better than Arizona State. Utah should win that game, and there shouldn't be a whole lot of questions coming out of there, quite frankly. That's, again, we'll talk about it later, but that's, you know, that's my early, you know, take on that game.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, like, Utah's favored by 11. This is a game that, you know, barring some unfortunate setbacks, like, this is, should be a game that Utah should be okay with. So we'll touch in that. But I do want to get into a point that, you know, we've seen on social media quite a bit recently, and nobody's more popular than the backup quarterback. That's just the nature of it. I mean, that's always what it is. It's not a Utah thing, and although Utah has obsessed about it a lot this year. But that's Brandon Rose, right? Like, he comes into the season as kind of the projected potential number one guy. Everybody kind of saw his ability to throw well. I mean, he's a good passer down deep. He still doesn't have a full command of the offense, but I think there was a lot of hope and optimism that he could be the guy. He's been, you know, cleared to be on the field, and he's running scout team work and doing different things that way. He hasn't dressed, though. And that's kind of where, you know, where that lies with him. You're going to be writing something a little bit deeper on this Thursday, and we've touched on it a little bit this week already in some of what you've written in the mailbag and stuff, but kind of break down a little bit of, is this Brandon Rose's time? Should Utah kind of take a jump with him, or kind of what's going on right now?
No, this is not Brandon Rose's time. It is not time to just throw him out there. And again, look, as you said, you know, the latest Utes mailbag, it's Tuesday morning, right? The latest Utes mailbag is now available on KSL.com. I get into this there. You have to remember, college football is not the NFL, where teams are potentially tanking for a better draft pick, right? It's not a lost season for an NFL team, right, where it's week 9, week 10, you're not making the playoffs. Let's see what the younger guys have. Let's experiment the quarterback, where you are essentially more or less losing on purpose to get a better draft pick. That's not what this is. College football coaches are wired to win football games. They are always trying to win football games, no matter what the situation is. And Kyle Whittingham has made that clear in the past, that they are whoever gives them the best chance at quarterback each and every week will play the position. Right now, Kyle believes that Bryson Barnes gives them the best chance to win a football game, and he has referenced Bryson Barnes in one way or another as, quote, you know, our guy, our quarterback, we're going to go with Bryson Barnes. Fine. I understand that a lot of people at this point are clamoring for Brandon Rose. They want to see what Brandon Rose can do. Correct me if I'm wrong. Please stop me. That notion from fans is sort of rooted in the fact that going back to the spring, now remember, the spring was Rising was out, and you were essentially looking to see not only who would be Rising's backup, but who would be the most viable option to start a football game if Rising was not ready for the opener. So Brandon Rose started spring a little slowly, but he came on and he got better and better. It was Brandon Rose and Nate Johnson at that time getting a lot of the reps. Okay, Kyle had kind of viewed Bryson Barnes as a known commodity. They thought they knew what they had in Barnes. So spring is going to be about Nate Johnson and Brandon Rose getting the majority of the reps, trying to decide what you have. By the time spring ended, okay, Brandon Rose played really well in the spring game. And again, the spring game is the spring game. Like, you're not going too deep into the bag. You're not pulling out all the tricks. You're not tackling the quarterback, but he looked really good. So he came out of spring. You know, if they were playing a football game right then, Brandon Rose would have started a football game if they had to play one. You go into camp, you add Bryson Barnes to the mix. You know, Brandon Rose had still done enough where he was at least in the mix to start the opener. Maybe Bryson Barnes overtakes him eventually, but you had gone into the first week of camp, the first couple of weeks of camp, with Brandon Rose still in the mix. Brandon Rose gets hurt during the first summer scrimmage.
Yep.
In full pads. He told me yesterday he didn't want to get too far into the injury, but he called it a football play. You know, bad luck, people get hurt. So you're in a situation where he was pretty seriously injured.
Yep.
And it included a night in the hospital, and he missed about 4 or 5 weeks of camp slash practice, which means you missed a ton of reps and a ton of work and a ton of time that you could have been on the field improving. Since then, he has come back. He is healthy. He's been running the scout team. Kyle, you know, has kind of sung his praises a couple of times in his scout team work. And as you said, Josh, Brandon Rose has not dressed. It's been Bryson Barnes and Nate Johnson and Luke Batari at number three. And there's no sign here that Brandon Rose is even going to dress as QB3. What we're looking at here is, and we talked with Kyle about this on Monday, and this was the second time that he said that the path now for Brandon Rose is to seek a medical redshirt. And to get a medical redshirt from the NCAA, you can pretty much count on Brandon Rose is probably not going to take a snap this fall.
Yeah.
Right. To, you know, to keep your case for the NCAA to, you know, to give you a medical redshirt. So that's sort of where we are with Brandon Rose. I understand that fans are clamoring for him. You want to see what Brandon Rose has, but you're going to have to let go of that because, again, with the medical redshirt situation, you want to save the year of eligibility. You're not going to see Brandon Rose. And even if we weren't talking about a medical redshirt, no matter what you think of this Utah team, okay, and laugh at me all you want, with two conference losses, you are not eliminated from the Pac-12 championship game discussion. So even if you want to experiment with Rose or Luke Batari or Nate Johnson or whoever, they're not up to that point yet because you are still playing meaningful games with technically a chance to get back to Vegas. However, like, limited that chance may be, you still have that chance. So if you're going to experiment, which they won't, but if you were going to experiment, now is not the time to just toss Brandon Rose in there.
Yeah, and the only reason why you would consider playing Rose this year is if you were that worried that he was going to transfer out and he was kind of your only hope, right? And even then, I don't know that that's the great answer.
I don't think that's a good enough answer to play.
No, I agree, honestly, because I think, you know, like, you still have to be competitive, and throwing Brandon Rose is not going to – like, for his own self-confidence, that's not going to work, right? Like, you saw what happened to Nate Johnson. He just wasn't ready for that spotlight yet. Maybe he's not even ready as a quarterback, but – you can't just throw a guy out there because he wants to be the guy, right? Like, coaches have to still coach the game and they have to coach to win. And yeah, you can throw in the towel and do that, but it's not going to change anything for Utah. It's not going to all of a sudden, you know, help a guy because, oh, well, you got to start the last four games of the season. Now, are you going to stay with us? No, like, that's just not the nature of it. This, like, I understand, like, they absolutely want Brandon Rose to stay, right? Like, I think him leaving in the transfer portal would be a big devastation to the program because they have a lot of faith in him. They believe in him and they want him to stay. But, like, you can't fix that by putting him in the games this year, right? Like, nobody knows what Cam Rising's status is going to be. And obviously he played that off a little bit at game day, and he should, right? Like, I know a lot of people were like, oh, he was too dismissive. Like, what do you want him to say, right? Like, he's not
going
to announce.
He's not going on national TV and, like, announcing what he's doing. Even if he knew what he was doing, that was not the venue. That was not the arena for Rising to
say something like that. And so, like, look, he's still stuck with his own home. Easy, man. Like, no.
Sorry. Moving my chair in. Whoops.
He's stuck with his own decisions, and he's going to deal with that. And Utah, hopefully, on their side, is going to be able to have some understanding of where he's leaning. But, like, I don't think any of that changes your decision on Brandon Rose, right? Like, if Cam Rising doesn't come back and all of a sudden you lose Brandon Rose as well, yeah, you're in quite the predicament, right? Like, you've got to go heavy into the transfer portal, and you've got to find somebody immediately. But none of this changes, right? Like, I still don't think there's anything that can be done right now that's going to keep Brandon, you know, happy, or anything that's going to keep him in the transfer portal. If he's happy at Utah, he's going to stay. And that's just the nature of it. So, like, you can get off and say, like, you're upset that, like, Utah's not doing this, but there's no scenario where putting Brandon Rose is the better option. It's just not. And so, you know, let it die right now, but I just don't think that this is a spot where Brandon ever becomes a great option at quarterback.
No, the timing is just not there, and he's missed a lot of work. I mean, don't discount how much, even though he's healthy now and he's, you know, scout team and the whole thing, like, don't discount how much time a month is, 5 weeks is, in terms of reps and work and on-field stuff. Sure, I'm sure he was in the film room with his guys, you know, grinding on tape and whatever, but, like, there's no replacement for actual reps. Now, again, I talked to Brandon Rose. I'm going to go a little deeper into this on Thursday. What Rising decides to do whatever he decides to do, and how that affects, like, what, you know, what trickle down effect there is in the quarterback room. That is the number one offseason storyline, because if Rising stays, he's obviously starting. And if he's starting, that's another year where nobody else is starting.
Yeah.
So if you're Nate Johnson, again, we don't know what the portal will look like for some of these guys, but, you know, right now, like, if Rising's back, he's starting, nobody else is starting. So if you're Nate Johnson, if you are Brandon Rose, to a lesser extent, if you are Mac Howard, how much patience do you have? What is your NIL situation? Like, look, let's not be naive, because if some of these NIL situations are sufficient, that might compel guys to stay no matter what the situation is with Rising. So if Rising stays, that is one situation behind him in the room. Now, if Rising leaves, you look at the room, it's like, okay, maybe some of these guys stay, but do you want to go into year one in the Big 12 where you could potentially challenge for a Big 12 title immediately based on the projected 24 roster? Do you want to go in there with a quarterback who is inexperienced? Like, if Rising leaves, do you believe that you have the guy in the room already? And if you don't believe you have the guy in the room already, how hard are you hitting the portal, like, immediately looking for the potential starter? Again, what is Utah's NIL situation look like to go into the portal to grab somebody experienced? A lot of fans have been very dismissive on, like, some of these things that I'm talking about. These are, like, real, not problems, but, like, these are real issues that are going to have to be sorted out, like, in very short order. Like, if Rising leaves, you have to figure that out
fast.
Immediately.
Yep.
Immediately. You need to go into spring ball with at least one veteran guy in the room to, at a minimum, push the rest of the room. Okay, if you think Brandon Rose is it, that's fine. He's never taken a collegiate snap. Zero collegiate snaps. You want to go into year one in the Big 12 with Brandon Rose as your starter with zero collegiate snaps? If they do that, they need to be really, really sure of what they're looking at in practice, because that's all they have right now is film on practice. He has never taken a collegiate snap.
We're talking about practice, right?
We're talking about practice, man.
Not a game. Just practice.
Practice.
No, the thing that this gets compounded on most is the NIL. Quarterback of all the positions, this is where NIL matters the most. And if, you know, in the announcement that Utah had with the Crimson Collective for the trucks that they were given leased, I'm sorry. I get it.
Took me a minute to figure out what you were doing, but yeah, well done.
I'm not just having a stroke. I mean, I might. But as they were talking about this and, like, how great it was, as part of their recruiting pitch to get more on NIL money, they asked to have $5 million by December. So all the donors and the boosters there, they're trying to get $5 million. And you want to know, a majority of that is going to the quarterback. Now, the quarterback's not drawing $5 million to come to Utah.
Not here, they're not. No,
it's getting close. But, like, for Utah, Cam Rising is – there's potential that he's up in that million range, right? Like, we don't know fully, but from what I've heard, it's pretty close to that range. Top-tier talent for this quarterback is closer to $2 million. So if you're trying to keep a competitive quarterback that's going to get you to where you need to go, that's where this is right now. So if you're not able to, you know, to get it to work through the, you know, as a recruit, as a freshman, which is still bringing in top dollar for NIL, you've got to be able to find somebody and you've got to have the money available. If not, Utah's always going to be in this cycle. And teams are finding this out, that if you can't get a competitive quarterback, you're in a world of hurt, right? Like, you look at this Utah team. They're great. They're stacked. They've got talent at every position. It's clearly shown in terms of the depth and the injuries that they've had. But if they don't have a quarterback that can do what they need them to do, Utah's just another team, right? They're not where they need to be. So whether that's Rising, keeping him here, or trying to find another top-end talent, and maybe that is still keeping a Brandon Rose or Nate Johnson or whomever that may be, it's going to cost some money. And I think that's where this becomes the trickier part for Utah, is they need to figure this out early. They need to have it by December so that they have all at their disposal. They need to know, is Cam coming back? Probably by December. They need to have those things figured out, or else this becomes a much more tricky situation and Utah's behind the eight ball.
Can I be honest?
No, I want you to lie.
I got to be honest.
Okay.
This is just my opinion. All right. the Dodge Ram leases, that's a great NIL tool. That's a nationally relevant thing. That is great. That's a great look for Utah. Mm-hmm. When you are talking about at least middle tier to top tier quarterback talent out of the portal, a leased Dodge Ram truck is not getting that done.
No, not at all.
The Crimson Collective is going to have to really figure that out. And I'm being real careful here because there's a lot of things at stake within that Crimson Collective, and you're trying to figure some things out still to try to get that like fully integrated and fully on board. It's going to take a lot more than a Dodge Ram lease to get a top tier experienced quarterback in here if you want to contend in the Big 12 immediately.
It works for the rest of the team, right? Like all the scholarship players, that's a phenomenal NIL deal.
Tremendous.
But you've got to play the game now. And I think Kyle has obviously gotten wind of it. And now that the NIL collectives have been better for Utah and they've finally gotten around to what it is,
yep.
Kyle seems much more at ease. But this is job one, as he likes to say. Job one is to get a top tier quarterback, and that may still just be Cam, right? Like, I'm not saying it's not, but you're going to still have to pay top dollar for Cam. And, you know, maybe there's something you can't necessarily do pay for play, but maybe you have to create something that is tied to him being on the field, because the last thing you need is for Cam to say he's coming back and then not getting on the field. Now, I don't think that, like, the reality is Cam was out there throwing passes well beyond practice last night, right? Like, that's like, he's out there, he's practicing, right? And like, he's with this team, he's doing things. You're shaking your head because I'm probably saying no stuff, but
no. I was going to bring this up, but I hesitated, and now you're bringing it up, and I keep going. I don't care.
The thing is, this isn't a secret, right? Like, there's nothing that from the Utah staff that tells us we can't talk about this type of stuff. He's out there practicing, right? Like, he's working through this stuff with the team. I think he's bought in, but that still means dollars and cents have to go to him, right? Like, that's just the nature of it. It's not his fault. You know, he's cashing in on his talent. He's a two-time Pac-12 champion. Like, Utah's never done that before. He's the only quarterback in Utah history that's ever done that for them.
He's on the Mount Rushmore of Utah football.
100%. Just for 100%. That, right? So, like, this is where he's at. So he's going to command top dollar, and that means he's going to get top dollar from other programs. Florida tried recruiting him over the summer, right? They wanted him. A lot of other teams are going to do it. I still think Utah has the advantage. He likes the system. He's been here. It's really hard to be able to go to another program and learn a system and get in. It's not impossible. But, like, I think Utah still has the advantage, but money's still going to talk at the end of the day, and that's what this Crimson Collective has to figure out. They have to figure out all that. This is just the world that we're in, and you can hate it, you can love it. I personally think you should embrace it because, like, this is the world that it's in. And if you want Utah to be a top-tier team, this is the world that they have to live in. You can run away from it, or you can embrace it and deal with it. And that's what Utah's doing. Kyle is trying to embrace it, and he's doing everything that he possibly can to get there. He's trying to find all that money for the quarterback, and then he's still getting deals for the rest of the players so that they don't feel like they're left on the wayside there. This is a good thing for Utah. It's just a matter of how you juggle that quarterback room is going to make a huge difference in where Utah is at moving forward.
And just to finish this up, I mean, you kind of alluded to practice on Monday, right? Monday at Utah is generally a walkthrough day, right? They're in practice jerseys, shorts, no pads, no nothing, straight walkthrough. The media obviously does not watch anything, but we get into the indoor facility like as the walkthrough is ending. So we walk in there yesterday at the end of walkthrough. We're starting to do some interviews, and off to the side, Rising is in his practice jersey, in his practice shorts with a sleeve on the left knee. And I'm telling you right now, if you thought like he wouldn't be engaged now that he's out, he was there and going through the walkthrough, and he was slinging the ball, like on
really,
the move,
really good,
kind of like half speed, right? He wasn't doing anything crazy, but like, I just like want to put it out there that he was slinging it and he was moving, and he could still throw a rope.
Yeah.
So if you're one of these crazy people that, you know, are thinking like, we need to move on from Rising, we need to no. If he wants to come back, Kyle will welcome him back, and everybody's going to get on board, because I'm telling you, 45 yards on a dime, half speed, slinging the rock yesterday at the indoor facility. You will welcome Cam Rising back if he wants to come back.
It honestly looked like some of the best passing he's done. And it's air work, right? Like, this isn't
pads, just half joking around, but yeah.
But I mean, he looked good, and you know, I mean, he's engaged. He's engaged in the program. The fact that he's going on game day and doing this, this isn't like an obligatory thing that Cam has to do, right? If he's done with the program, he doesn't have to do that or wants to, right? And that's just where it is. So
they approached him like Jordy Lindley or Paul Kirk or somebody approached him like, do you want to appear on game day, appear on McAfee? And like, obviously he did. He is remaining. This is the point. He is remaining engaged with the program. The fact that he is remaining engaged is a good sign for Utah. It's not everything, but as you said, Josh, if he was done mentally, if he was done, he wouldn't be doing any of the things we're talking about. No McAfee, no game day, no walkthrough. He is remaining engaged. That is a good sign moving forward.
Yeah, you don't want to get, you know, build up false hope, but I think everything is still in Utah's favor. If he decides to come back, I mean, he could test the NFL waters. He could just say, I'm done with football in general. I don't think that's there. The reality is, too, you got to realize these guys have to take classes, right? Like, they still have to say, do I want to be a student? And yeah, there's a minimum classes that you have to take, and so maybe it's not a ton, but you still have to be a student, and that's not easy. You can't just, like, you know, walk through football, and you can argue if some of those classes are easy for him. But this is a tough decision for him. But I think everything is still trending well for Utah. This is Josh and I not knowing anything officially from anything. This is just us speculating based on what we've seen. So, but we've got a bunch of other stuff that we can talk about, but we've hit an hour, so we can save that for Thursday. But I think there's a lot obviously going on with Utah, and you know, you can take away what you want from that with the loss on Saturday. But the reality is the team's moving forward. Their best, you know, approach is to not let Oregon beat them twice, and Utah hasn't really done that much in the last few years.
No, but, certainly not. No.
But this is where this program is. So. We'll break down the Arizona State game a little bit more. We'll have a lot more to talk about. There was a lot, honestly, from Kyle Whittingham's presser on Monday, so we'll get into that. So anything more you want to jump into, Josh, before we leave?
No. Happy Halloween. Happy belated birthday. Go have some birthday cake. I know it's your favorite.
Yeah.
And enjoy your young one while he's still young. That's what I'm going to try to do.
That's right. He's dressed up as Jalen Hurts, which hurts me because I'm a Cowboys fan. So he's a big Eagles fan and whatever. That's kids, man. Whatever.
That's amazing. Your kid's an Eagles fan. You're a Cowboys fan. That is tremendous dichotomy.
I know. I just don't care enough to really make it matter, but it is funny that he's like, Dad, why aren't you cheering for him? It's like, well, why would I cheer for them? They're in the same division, man.
Oh, these kids, man. These kids.
You love them. I don't know. All right. Well, that's the Utah Checkdown podcast today, and we'll get back to you on Thursday. Have a great Halloween.
Later, guys.